It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Tom Shalhoub.
I'm Liz Peek.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. RFK Jr. is only on the ballot in one state so far, but he's got his pick for VP as the independent candidate pushes for ballot access across the country.
There is a distrust, a disillusionment with the state of American society that's widely seen when you look at polling of the American public. And people do not like the direction that the country's going in.
I'm Dave Anthony. The first Trump criminal trial might start next month in New York, where the former president is charged with falsifying records and so-called hush money payments.
So I can't sit here and say to you, I can't see any way that Judge Merchan sends Trump to prison for this, but he shouldn't. It would be an outrage given the kind of violent crimes that that either don't get prosecuted in New York or get pled down to something less serious.
And I'm Linda McMahon. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has announced his pick for vice president, with an introductory speech calling out the nation's debt, contaminated food, big tech collusion and government censors, the Uniparty, and more, telling the crowd in Oakland, California, what his vice presidential pick has learned.
That the USDA works for big ag and the processed food cartels. That the EPA is in cahoots with the polluters. That scientists can be mercenaries, that government officials sometimes act as censors, and that the Fed works for Wall Street and allows millionaire bankers to prey upon Main Street.
And he said of his vice presidential choice, Nicole Shanahan, that she is young, can connect with millennials, is a technologist familiar with AI, and an athlete whom Kennedy said will inspire Americans to take care of their health. Shanahan told the crowd a big part of her journey toward finding health solutions is having an autistic daughter.
I am going to assemble the best technologists and scientists in the world, and we will use the latest in AI and computation to examine the health records databases of our nation and those other nations who are also on a quest to solve chronic disease.
Shanahan was married to and is recently divorced from Google co-founder Sergey Brin. She said during her speech that for the next 7 months, she'll be working to get Kennedy on all the state's ballots. In introducing her, Kennedy urged Americans to stop fighting each other as he pointed to his rivals.
They ran up a greater debt than all previous presidents combined since George Washington. Two men with a single term in office each.
And as he's mentioned so many times before, RFK Jr. said his focus will be on undoing what he calls the corporate merger of state and corporate power. But now, with a 38-year-old female technologist, surfer, and mother at his side.
Well, look, she complements the sort of tech skepticism that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. brings to the table.
Josh Krasauer is Fox News Radio's political analyst.
With his independent campaign for president, she's a Silicon Valley attorney and entrepreneur who's a donor to Kennedy's campaign efforts. She's from California. She is young. She's fluent in sort of AI, the tech world, all the debates that we have about the future of technology these days. I think even though she's less of a kind of a conspiracy theorist than Kennedy when it comes to vaccines, she also has raised questions about sort of certain safety issues along the lines of the skepticism that Kennedy has brought to the table to his political detriment, frankly. So, like, she is the type of pick that largely underscores the anti-establishment, heterodox type of candidacy that Kennedy is running. And look, in terms of image, a young woman on his side who has background in the business world is going to be a big asset. And frankly, she has close ties to a lot of the donors that have fueled Kennedy's fundraising efforts as well.
Yeah, and she said she looks forward to helping him get on the ballot. I think that means dollar signs. One thing, Josh, that he noted a couple of times, that RFK Jr. noted a couple of times, was that Nicole grew up in poverty and knows what it's like to suffer financially. And I thought, is that kind of a smart counter to what may be seen as Kennedy privilege, you know, even if she did go on to marry the CEO of Google.
Yeah, great story. She was raised by a father who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Her mother immigrated from China to the United States, struggling to make ends meet for their family. So she really is a rags to riches type of story in contrast to the Kennedy mystique. So look, the bigger question though, Jess, is like, how many people are going to be hearing the Kennedy story? How much money are they going to have to advertise the tickets, message on television, right? And how much are they going to be eligible for the debates? If there are debates this year, are they going to get kind of mainstream oxygen? I was struck that a lot of networks took the announcement live, which shows that there is a lot of interest and attention to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent campaign for president. But look, you know, she is someone who is behind the scenes politically. She's got a great story in terms of her personal, you know, rags to riches upbringing. Yeah. But she is not someone who most Americans are at all familiar with.
I noticed that he did not mention vaccines during his speech introducing Shanahan. He calls his stance skepticism, though some of his critics say it sounds more like denial in some cases. But Nicole said that she has a daughter who has autism. She did not say in her speech that she believes her daughter's autism was caused by vaccines. But she did reference that vaccines broadly there may be some health concerns surrounding vaccines. It sounds like that's the way, you know, that they're going to talk about it is, you know, actual people who have questions about, you know what I mean?
I don't know if they're, I mean, look, if they're politically smart, they're not going to, if vaccines are the top issue for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign, he may be appealing to a niche of the country, right? But that's not a winning type of political message. And, you know, I've been impressed that Kennedy has run a pretty disciplined type of campaign. His speeches have been on message, targeting the fact that he's an alternative to the, you know, 70 and 80 of the sclerotic leadership that Republicans and Democrats are providing. Mm-hmm. He does kind of focus his heterodox new ideas, trying to break some of that monopoly as an independent candidate. But if this election is about vaccines, that is a losing message. Right. Most Americans have taken the COVID vaccine. I think they have the political sense that there are other issues that are more favorable for them.
Okay, before we hit on ballot access and getting on ballots, what do the polls say about RFK Jr.? I read he has got sort of higher favorability than maybe some of the other candidates, but it depends on the poll. And there was a New York Times Siena College poll in October that showed in Arizona he had like 26% support, and in Georgia he had 24% support. If it was a three-way race, those are obviously older polls. Now you look at the aggregate, like the Decision Desk HQ aggregate of 100 polls, and it shows like RFK Jr. like below 10%.
So number one, like you have two fairly unpopular major party nominees, historically unpopular, perhaps. So there is a market for a third party candidate or candidates, where there are other third party candidates on some ballots this year. At the same time, we know from history, Jess, that polling in the spring, when you throw out a name of someone who is, you know, with a name like Kennedy, I don't know if everyone knows about Kennedy's campaign message, but they certainly know the last name as part of the Camelot royalty and you know, his uncle being the former president of the United States. So, look, I think those are high watermark numbers in the polls. If you look at some more recent polling, I think it's closer to 10%, give or take a couple points in national polls. And then we'll talk about ballot access, but that is sort of the asterisk under those numbers. By those numbers, he's not going to necessarily be on the ballot in every state, so it's going to, you know, deter him from hitting his poll numbers if he doesn't qualify in all 50 states.
Yeah, so he's saying, look, he's only on the ballot in Utah right now, but he has the signatures to get on in Nevada, New Hampshire. Apparently, in Nevada, you need a running mate first. But then he said he said he believes he can get on the ballot in all 50 states. But can he, especially with this snag of the DNC accusing his campaign of illegally coordinating with his super PAC to gather those signatures?
Yeah, well, that's a question too, because it's the super PAC American Values 2024 is very involved in collecting those signatures, and there's some questions about like whether that's legal or not, whether an outside group can be doing the signature gathering. They have enough signatures, they say, to get him on the ballot in some pretty important states. Like, you know, you mentioned it, Jess, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, and others. So, but look, if you're not going to be on the ballot in all 50 states, you're just going to be playing spoiler. You know, you need to get 270 electoral votes to win. If Kennedy's not on the ballot in a number of important states, it's hard to see how he gets to that in a best case scenario, in an ideal world, how he can get to that number, mathematically speaking.
It is a math game, right? You look at Georgia, Biden won that by what, nearly like 12,000 votes, same in Arizona. In 2020, right? And then in 2016, Trump won Michigan by like, what was it, 11,000 or 12,000 votes? Those are really small margins in these swing states. Even if he doesn't win, to your point about being a spoiler, he could really be a huge factor. Like, how much of a threat do the existing campaigns see him as? Like, what's the Biden camp like doing?
Yeah, well, so the Biden camp, they have, there are a couple of very seasoned Democratic operatives that are actually working, I believe, alongside the DNC to discredit these third party candidates, including Kennedy, but also Cornel West and Jill Stein. That's the biggest enemy right now for Joe Biden. The fact that you could have third party candidates peel off younger voters, progressive left wing types that are uncomfortable with Biden, but could use one of these third party candidates as a vehicle for their vote. I think that Kennedy is fascinating because you could make an argument that he actually takes more votes away from, if you look at the data, if you look at some of these surveys, he does peel off a number of Donald Trump voters as well. Like message on, the anti-establishment message, very much appealing to conservatives. His supporters in Silicon Valley are drawn disproportionately from the right, not the left. Mm-hmm. Now his name being a Kennedy and the fact that he originally was a pretty high profile progressive activist, especially on environmental issues. That's how he got his, aside from his name, his advocacy focused on sort of environmental issues. And he built up a following on the left so that, he does have appeal in both spaces. It really is situational based on the money they're spending, the ballot access and all the different variables we've been talking about.
Finally, on the substance of what RFK Jr. said, and he said this before introducing Nicole Shanahan, but he said this a lot before. His message, his focus is the $34 trillion in debt, is, the environment, is why are we all so sick and have chronic pain and chronic disease all the time? And like his message is very, have we heard him? Have we heard anything like this out of anybody who's come this far or has this much support in a presidential campaign?
Yeah, well, he's targeting his message, I think, quite smartly at alienated America. The independent voters disproportionately don't like either party, that they're kind of disconnected from the political process. And that is the message that Kennedy is really directing targeting the elites, there's a message for people who care about the environment, who think that big companies are polluting the waterways and causing problems. The big powerful entities causing problems with the environment. So, There is a distrust, a disillusionment with the state of American society that's widely seen when you look at polling of the American public. The people do not like the direction that the country's going in. And Kennedy's message is an anti-establishment, anti-elite message, trying to really tap into that anger and frustration out in the country.
Josh Krasauer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jess.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
This is Linda McMahon with your Fox News commentary, coming up.
Jury selection is set for April 15th in New York City for the first criminal trial for any former president ever. one of four looming Trump cases he calls a witch hunt and a hoax.
It's a shame what's happening to our country. This is election interference.
He is the presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee. Now, his lawyers keep trying to get the case dismissed, filing another motion in New York claiming no fair or impartial jury can be seated. The former president said Monday, Democrats are weaponizing the law.
They're all trying to damage Trump as much as possible. It's having the reverse effect, but maybe someday it won't. I don't know.
Now, this case dates back to his first run for president in 2016. He's accused of trying to cover up
a scheme to buy and suppress negative information to help Mr. Trump's chance of winning the election.
That was Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg announcing the indictment in April of last year, charging the former president with falsifying business records, repaying his ex-attorney, turned now rival, Michael Cohen, for giving porn star Stormy Daniels $130,000 to keep her quiet about an alleged Trump affair years earlier that he denies they had.
Even what Bragg would have you believe is the crime is not the crime, which is why there's so much smoke and mirrors to this.
Andy McCarthy is a Fox News contributor and former assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York.
Non-disclosure agreements. I mean, they're called hush money, which is a kind of a pejorative term. But non-disclosure agreements are a fixture of civil settlements in the United States. There's nothing per se illegal about them.
Okay.
So he enters, Trump through Cohen enters this hush money arrangement, non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels at the end of October. And then they pay Cohen back in installments basically from February through December of 2017. So it was the repayment of a debt, and Trump booked it as if it were ongoing payment of legal fees to Cohen, who was a lawyer, even though he didn't have many clients. So that's the falsity of the business records entry, according to Bragg. I'm not sure, Dave, that it actually even qualifies to be a misdemeanor, because under New York law, to be a misdemeanor, you have to falsify the records with fraudulent intent. But no one seems to have been harmed. And even Bragg doesn't contend that New York was cheated out of any money.
Yet, this is not, you mentioned misdemeanor. These are 34 felony counts, because the allegation is that the falsifying of business records was to conceal a crime. So is the crime the violation of campaign finance law? Is that the allegation?
That seems to be the main allegation, yes. I think it's obvious that what the New York legislature meant by that is another New York crime. But here, the other crime that Bragg essentially contends that Trump committed is a federal campaign finance offense. And that's problematic on various grounds, not least of which is that Bragg does not have authority as a state prosecutor to enforce the federal campaign finance laws.
Okay.
The two federal agencies that do have that authority, the Justice Department and the Federal Election Commission, both looked at this and decided not to take action against Trump. And the reason for that is it's not a campaign expenditure.
Okay, but at the same time, remember, he was the sitting president, and nobody indicts a sitting president. That's number one. And in 2018, Michael Cohen was charged with violating campaign finance laws and pleaded guilty to lying. So that's a campaign finance violation, is it not? And he's related to these payments. So how is that not?
First of all, Cohen was pleading guilty in an unrelated fraud case. I say unrelated because it's unrelated to this transaction and Trump is not implicated in it. He was looking at a hefty jail sentence. He ended up being sentenced to 3 years of imprisonment, which I think was actually a light sentence under the circumstances, because he allegedly evaded over $4 million in income taxes beyond making false statements to financial institutions and committing perjury in connection with the Mueller investigation. So in the straits he was in, he agreed to plead guilty to a campaign finance violation, even though I don't think he committed one, because he was trying to sell himself to the Southern District of New York, my old office, as a potential cooperating witness against Trump, knowing that they were trying to make a case against Trump. The problem is the transaction is actually not a campaign finance expenditure.
Well, some people might argue, well, wait a minute. Well, why are you paying in October of 2016 to keep a story quiet if you're not running for president, you're not going to do this?
There's common sense and then there's law, right? So the law is that you have to meet certain technical requirements in order for something to be a campaign expenditure. This one doesn't meet them because it's not an expense that's generated or has its origins in the campaign. If the failure to disclose here had been sufficient to make a case against Trump, the Southern District could have brought a case and the Federal Election Commission could have brought a case against Trump. They didn't because they didn't think they had a campaign finance payment technically, even if the campaign was Trump's motivation to pay.
Cohen may be a key witness in this case. His testimony, you think it'll be vital? Do you think it'll help? Do you think that it's going to be damaging?
I think it's going to be damaging to Cohen. I mean, look, we know what Cohen's story is, and it's not doesn't paint Trump in a good light, obviously. But, you know, he's very obviously turned on Trump. Cohen, as I said, did 3 years in prison on his multiple fraud convictions. When you come out of prison, there's some monitoring requirements that the probation office does on you. Cohen was trying to get those removed. The judge declined to remove them. And one of the things the judge pointed out is that Cohen now denies that he's guilty of the tax evasion crimes that he pled guilty to in the Southern District. So the judge pointed out that he gave his statement of why he was guilty of those crimes under oath. So then in the Trump civil fraud trial in New York, he claimed that he actually wasn't guilty of what he had pled guilty to. And the federal judge pointed out last week that means either Cohen committed perjury at the Trump civil trial very recently or Cohen committed perjury when he pled guilty. But one way or the other, he has to have committed perjury in at least one of those proceedings, if not both. And he seems to say what is expedient for him to say in the moment. And I think a large part of the reason that the Southern District may have decided not to bring a case against Trump is because they knew that Cohen would be a central witness and he's not a very good witness.
Now, just like in some other Trump cases, the judge presiding over this one in New York, Juan Merchan, imposed a gag order yesterday prohibiting former President Trump from making public comments about Michael Cohen or Stormy Daniels or other witnesses in the case. He also can't talk about prosecutors or court staff or their family members, which the Trump campaign calls unconstitutional, not only violating his political free speech rights, but also the rights Americans have to hear his speech. Now, the gag order came hours after Trump Truth Social posts targeting Judge Merchan, who the former president says won't give him a fair trial, as a true and certified Trump hater, whose daughter is a senior executive at a super Democrat law firm. And he accused the judge of viciously treating and threatening a former Trump employee in another case. As for those comments about the judge,
frankly, you know, I think this is part of the reason that Trump has so much trouble getting and keeping good lawyers. You know, this is something that not only would a lawyer plead with you not to do, but, you know, the lawyer is going to have to face the wrath of the judge for what, you know, Trump is doing on the sidelines here. And that's going to be very unpleasant for the lawyer. But here, it's a very different context because we're talking politics as well as law. And I think that Trump anticipates, and I think he's probably right about this. I think Trump anticipates that he's likely to be convicted in this case, and he's trying to set up the argument that he will make later on that the whole thing was rigged against him from the start.
He's been saying that for all these criminal cases, Andy. So if he gets convicted on this one, he's already laying the groundwork to continue his claim that it's not real, right?
That's basically his campaign. Dave, I think he needs it to be his campaign because if these cases that we're talking about go to trial, this case is going to take 4 to 6 weeks to try. If one of the other federal cases gets to trial, or even both of them, they're estimated to be 2 to 3 month trials. In criminal law, a defendant has to be present for every moment of the trial. He's going to be stuck in court. So the narrative about the the cases is essential to his campaign because it's going to be so he's going to spend so much time in courtrooms.
You talk the political side of it. But if he's convicted criminally in trial one, sometime in May or whatever it ends, what does it mean for him legally?
Hard to tell. I mean, I think that of all the cases, this one is the one that will hurt him the least to be convicted in, because a lot of people, even a lot of people on the left side of the political spectrum who can be honest and objective, look at this case and see that it's a ridiculous case that should never have been brought. And I doubt that the Democrats had it to do over again. I don't think this is the case they would have wanted to start with. You know, for them, they want one of the two federal cases to go. They think, for example, the Mar-a-Lago documents case is a very strong case. And they think the January 6th case reminds the electorate of everything they hated about the Capitol riot. So they would really much prefer to have started with those.
That may be, but he could be sentenced to jail time, right? Time in prison, I mean, right?
Well, yeah, but look at what's going on in New York. I mean, you have violent criminals who brag either doesn't prosecute them or pleads their serious crimes down to less serious crimes so that they can avoid jail time. And then you have a situation with Trump where he's basically being accused of a nonviolent crime. The real offense is a nonviolent bookkeeping crime for which he shouldn't do an hour in prison. Now, does that mean he won't? You know, a lot of what's gone on in New York, I think, you know, if you look at the civil case, Trump exaggerated his assets. I think there's a lot of evidence that he did that. I think that's worth being fined. You know, maybe fine him several hundred thousand dollars or $1 million or whatever for what he did. But $454 million in a case with no victims? I didn't think a court would ever do something like that. So I can't sit here and say to you, I can't see any way that Judge Merchan sends Trump to prison for this, but he shouldn't. It would be an outrage given the kind of violent crimes that either don't get prosecuted in New York or get pled down to something less serious.
Andy McCarthy, Fox News contributor, senior fellow at the National Review Institute, former assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. Andy, great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. While most of us spent our St. Patrick's Day raising a pint or attending parades, the penguins at the Detroit Zoo made it a day to show their love. The zoo's penguins were caught on camera giving gifts to their partners in a sweet romantic gesture. There were multicolored painted pebbles were dropped into the penguins' enclosure, and the birds went right to them, picking a pebble of their choice and proudly bringing it over to their partner. The zoo posted on TikTok that penguins gift pebbles during their nesting season, seeking out the best and the prettiest to give to their mates. It's similar to engagement rings we humans use. Zoo officials say the pebble solidifies the relationship between the two penguins who are going to start a family together. And if the lady penguin likes it, she's going to place it in a nest, and the couple continues building a nest for their eggs. A video of the romantic gesture going viral on social media. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Linda McMahon. What's on your mind?
Andre Jones, a recent college grad, had been job hunting for months, until he enrolled in an IT apprenticeship program that led to full certification and a thriving career. George Forrest, an Army veteran, completed a diesel technician apprenticeship program that helped him transition from the military to civilian life. Allison Van Houten switched careers entirely because of an apprenticeship, leaving her job as a speech therapist to become a woodwork manufacturing specialist. These are just a few of the dozens of apprenticeship success stories touted on the Federal Apprenticeship USA website. Unfortunately, a new proposal by the Biden administration threatens to burden apprenticeship programs with red tape, extra costs, and more bureaucracy. The Department of Labor quietly released a nearly 800-page proposal to regulate apprenticeships right before Christmas. Between the holidays and the busy start to the year, this proposal went largely overlooked by the public, though businesses, trade groups, state agencies, and others have started to sound the alarm. All signs indicate that the administration wants to finalize this rule quickly, despite its complexity, jeopardizing the success of apprentice programs and even their viability. Apprenticeships can be a phenomenal way to connect workers with in-demand jobs and fill businesses' workforce needs. They allow workers to get on-the-job experience and training while getting paid, instead of spending years in school and foregoing a paycheck, or even taking on debt to find a job. Unfortunately, the Biden administration's new proposal risks relegating apprenticeships to a last resort option for businesses. Many pieces of the proposed rule are concerning. First, the proposed rule removes flexibility for businesses that run apprenticeship programs and imposes a one-size-fits-all structure. Second, the rule requires that businesses provide apprentices with the same benefits as full-time employees, including paid leave, health care, retirement benefits, and more. Essentially, businesses must provide the same benefits to apprentices as full-time employees without receiving the same caliber of work that a full-time employee provides. Providing benefits before the skills have been attained is backward and just doesn't make sense. Finally, the rule contains numerous provisions that are irrelevant to training skilled workers. They are diversity, equity, and inclusion mandates throughout the rule for both businesses and states that add costs and administrative burdens to all apprenticeship programs. For small and medium-sized businesses, these extra requirements essentially make apprentices cost prohibitive. Apprenticeship programs should focus on exactly one thing: training workers to earn the skills they need to find a job and flourish in their careers. Apprenticeships have been an underutilized tool in America for decades, but in the last several years, the tide has been turning. The number of active apprenticeships in the United States has more than doubled since 2014. If the Biden administration gets its way, this progress will grind to a halt. The Biden administration must rescind this disastrous proposed rule and instead implement policies that encourage more workers and businesses to pursue apprenticeships. Isn't this just common sense? This is Linda McMahon, chair of the American First Policy Institute and former administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.